Right, so we're holding on Sadiq Jalad Ahmed Bey. About ten lines from the bottom line. Again, Jakomatu. Okay, we left off. We were talking about the matter of selling or giving meat to a goy, where there's a concern that a Jew may buy it from him, and therefore, and what happens with the conveyor or trefa. We have the various scenarios in that regard, when a Jew would be allowed to buy it from him, when not, and therefore what you have to do about it. And also, intersecting with that, we were dealing with the whole matter of, with the matter of gnevas das, the idea that you're not allowed to do something, that you're not allowed to mislead another person. For example, we said you open a barrel of wine for him, where you're making it seem as though it's in his honor, when really you're not the one suffering a loss because the barrel was already sold to a storekeeper, etc. So the last thing we said was that when in places where the minhag is to make an announcement, when in places, again, where all of the shochtim in town are Jews, and therefore there's no real concern that there are goyim, that therefore all the meat in the town comes from those Jewish butchers, the only problem is that there may be a nevela or a trefa sometimes. So we said in some places they get around that by making an announcement that today there was a nevela or there was a trefa, and that way Jews know not to buy from goyim that day. So we said, what kind of announcement do we make? We don't openly say that there was a trefa, because then the goyim aren't going to want to buy it. They're going to think we're selling them second class meat, basically, the leftovers. Instead, we just say there's meat available for the bnei chela, for the army people, meaning, in other words, for the goyim. We said, isn't it a matter of misleading them? Isn't it a problem of gnevas das? So the last thing we said was no, because not gnevas das, because they're misleading themselves.
To not openly say
that it's trefa, just to say that there's meat available to sell to bnei chela, meat that's available to sell to the goyim. So the fact that you don't openly say that it's nevela or trefa, that's not a problem, because that if the goyim don't bother to ask, then they're misleading themselves. In other words, again, Rashi had said the idea is they could have asked whether you mean is it trefa or not.
What would they know?
Because they're familiar. If they live around Jews, and if all the shochtim in town are Jews, then they're bound to find out that concept. So therefore, we don't have to openly tell them that it's trefa, as long as, so for example, before we had, you know, open up a barrel for him, or you sell him meat, claiming that it's chuta or whatever, that's gnevas das. Over here, where he himself doesn't think something. So actually, Tosfos explains the distinction slightly differently. It's not even a matter of what you said versus what you didn't say. It's how likely is the person to realize that there's something going on over here. When it comes, let's say, to the barrel, it's hardly likely that the guest is going to realize that this barrel doesn't belong to you, that you sold it to the storekeeper, made an agreement with him that you could open it and take some out for a guest, et cetera, et cetera. He's much more likely to think it's your barrel. Therefore, when you open it for him, then you have and pretend as though it really is yours, that's your neighbor's barrel. Over here, it's a logical thing to assume. Over here, it's not even a matter of they could have asked. It's logical to assume there are a certain number of nevelos and trefas out there. Therefore they should have thought of it themselves. There's a high likelihood of it. Because there's not a high likelihood of the barrel belonging to the storekeeper. No, most of the time, but it's not a high likelihood. Here, there's a high likelihood. That's the difference. That's how Tosfos says the difference. Okay, so here's an example of that kind of thing. We have the example of Marzutra, the son of Rav Nachman. He was walking or traveling from Sichra to Bei Mechuza. The Rava and Rav Safra have also the Sichra. Meanwhile, at the same time, Rava and Rav Safra were on their way to Sichra. So they crossed paths on the way. Pogu Adadi, they met up with each other. Who Savar La'afi Hu Deka'asu. So the Marzutra thought that Rava and Rav Safra came out to greet him. Omalahu, so he says to them, Lomalahu L'Rabbanan D'Tiruach La'asu Kolahai. Why did you, Chachamim, bother coming out so far? That's very far to come just for my covered. Rav Safra tells him, no, we didn't come out in your honor. Anan lo hava yadin in dekaasi mar. The fact is, we didn't know. We were on our way in this way for some other purpose. We didn't know that you were coming. But actually, ihava yadin and tfei havi tachinan. And you know what? If we had known you were coming, we would have gone out even further. for your covered, we would have done.
Did we say previously that when you say for the covered?
That's one second. Let's finish the story.
Hold on.
Amalei Rava, my timer amut lehachi. So Rava says to Rav Safra, why do you tell him that? Gachlishte ledaite, you made him feel bad now because he thought that we're doing it for his covered. No, the covered we were talking about before is covered for him in the presence of other people. Here there weren't other people over here.
Two people.
Come on. Okay, fine. But the point is, we were talking about, let's say, with the Ovel or whatever, we were talking about where you have many other people, you want to raise his profile in their presence. Here you wouldn't have that. But still, the question is, Rava asks him, you made him feel bad by telling him that, because now, one sentence, that's the answer. Amalei, so Rav Safra says, oh, and I know, but I had to tell him, but I'll come up in and lay. I had to tell him, otherwise we're misleading him, otherwise we're doing Gnevas Das. He thinks we came out in his honor. And the answer is, Rava tells him, like we said before, no. Ihuhud kamati nafshe, no. If this would have been a case where he's misleading himself. If we didn't actually tell him in so many words, we came out in your honor, he could have asked on his own, are you coming this way to honor me, or did you just come out on business, as Rashi says? Or,
what he was
no, but he was saying he was surprised that they came out so far. But the point is, he didn't say, and so he didn't ask the question, according to Rashi, or according to Tosfos. Okay, or according to Tosfos, he himself might have realized that there's just as much of a chance that they came out in his honor as that they were going there for some other purpose. So therefore, it's not considered that they misled him. Tosfos also points out that also before with the case of the barrel, we said Rabbi Yehuda and Ulla, we said that Rabbi Yehuda was able to open such a barrel for Ulla because he liked Ulla very much. They were good friends, and therefore even if it had been his own barrel, he would have opened it. So Tosfos says the difference is right over there. The fact of the matter is he did open them in his honor, so therefore he's entitled to. So even without telling him, as long as they're good friends, then he's entitled to do that, and it's not considered Geneva's das. Here, the fact of the matter is they weren't coming out to honor him. Anyway, the point is, so that there we see this idea of Iuhud Kamate Nafshe, and therefore that sort of thing is allowed, says Rava. So Rav Safra, that he misled himself. In other words, Rava is telling Rav Safra, you didn't have to tell him, we didn't come out in his honor. Let him think that we did come out in his honor, as long as we didn't make it, as long as we didn't do things in such a way as to actually mislead him. As long as there's, according to Rashi, that he could have thought to ask the question, or according to Tosfos, that there's an equal chance that he could have thought, it's one way or the other. Then it's not Gnevas Das. Which, as a matter of halacha, so you have, for example, let's say the Alter Rebbe talks about in Shulchan Aruch, he brings in Hilchos Einah, he mentions, for example, in places where you have places where many of the butchers soak meat in water so that it looks fatter. In such places, in principle, he says, you have, for example, the smith says that it's allowed. It's also a case of Iyuhud Kamati Nafshayu, because they can realize it's a common practice to do, and therefore they could ask, they could easily find out, and if they don't bother asking, did you soak this meat in water, then that's allowed, says the smith. The Alter Rebbe says, okay, there is such a concept, fine. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe still says, Shremo Nafsha Yuchas Mizeh. Somebody who's careful with his neshama should be careful, because after all, you could argue the reason why people do such a thing in the first place. There are, after all, fat cuts of meat out there that look fat without soaking them in water. So therefore, it might be the guy is actually being misled, that you're making it look like it is actually one of those fat cuts of meat. So this is an example of that kind of thing. You have other posts you can also talk about different details in this, but that's the gist.
I had once my own case of sponsoring a Sefer Torah for a certain price.
Yeah.
And what I didn't know was that the one who sponsored the novice circuit that sponsored the ordering of the Sefer Torah would take a large grain of transmission to himself.
Okay.
And I wasn't aware of that. And then I learned it through a third party. Had I been aware, I would not have accepted that.
Okay.
It's
a good question. I don't know. It might be. On the other hand, it might be one of those kinds of things. You should realize that it's likely people take commissions, and you should have thought to ask. Again, it may depend on the question, how common is it in a particular situation to take commissions? I don't know. I'm not a rogue, but okay. Let's go on. Okay. Getting back to the matter of meat that was sold to Goyim and then might be resold to Jews, the Gemara tells a case, Ahu Tabcha, there was a butcher, the Amalei L'chavrei, that he says to another person, the Pashtos, another butcher, E. Havas Patton. Now, these two people were not getting along, Rashi says. Sonim Hoyu Zelazet. They hated each other. So the one butcher says to the other one, E. Havas, you know what? You want to know how much you're losing out by not being friends with me? E. Havas Paisis Minai, if you would have been friendly with me, Miloy Safiloch Mishosha Patam Da Abdi Esno, don't you think I would have given you some of the meat from a fatted ox that I shechted yesterday? So like this, look at that. You lost out by not being my friend. So the other guy says, actually, I didn't end up losing out. Achli neshufri shufri. I ate from the very best parts of it. I did actually get a good cut of meat from it. Amalei menolach. So the first one says, how did you guess? I certainly didn't sell it to you. Amalei. So the second one says, the zavan toini obit kechavim, because so-and-so, a guy, bought some of this meat from you, the sofali, and then he gave some of it to me. So I ended up having from it after all, whether you like it or not, I ended up having from that animal that you shechted. Tough luck. Amalei, however, the sheikha, the first guy says, today, Abdi, actually, you should know that yesterday I shechted two animals, Bahu Trefa Hava. One of them I sold only to Jews. The other one wound up a Trefa, and that's the one I sold to a guy. So you actually have different Rishonim learn over here. Are we talking about this is a place that Machrizin, and that day there was no Hachroza, or are we talking about that it's a place where Ein Machrizin, whatever it is. So the first shochet the same. So the second one, so look at that. You ended up buying today for meat. Amar Reb. Now on the face of it, we should say that means that there is so maybe there's a problem. Therefore, should we say that we should ask there to buy meat from Goyim under such circumstances? Amar Rebbe. So Rebbe says, what is it? The shvil shoyter zesha also shalika hagen. Just because of this foolish person, the first person who acted improperly, selling a trefa to a guy without making a hachroza or otherwise causing somebody to be misled, onu nef or kol makolin, should we therefore after all the butcher shops? Actually, Tosfos says that usually makolin means the butcher shops, and that's how Rashi translates it. Tosfos says specifically the makolin are the middlemen. You have the butcher sells meat. The butcher is a wholesaler, basically. I think Steinsaltz traces it to a Latin word, whatever it is, which means a butcher shop. Anyway, basically, Tosfos says that the makolin are the middlemen. You have the shochet has a side of beef or whatever from an animal that he shechted. He sells it to the goyish storekeepers who then retail it. They sell smaller pieces of it at retail. So the point is, in other words, that Tosfos is saying, what Rebbe is saying, according to this version, is we're not going to say that you should ask there to buy from any of the Goyish butcher shops in town and figure that just like he sold to one person a trefa without hachroza, so he may have done others. No, just because this shoytet acted improperly, says Rebbe, doesn't mean that we have to ask all of them. So the point is, Rebbe l'taimei, Rebbe goes according to his own shita, to Omar, because he says, Makolin b'tavcha Yisrael, when you have a case like this, that you have the Makolin, you have meat stores in the city, and b'tavcha Yisrael, and all the shochtim in town are Jews, then bosra nimtav, you have erb gechavim mutter, then meat that you find in such a place, in the hands of a goy, then it's mutter, because obviously they bought it from the tabachim, they themselves didn't shecht it. So therefore, in other words, Rebbe is saying, and Tosfos points out, there's not a problem if the goy may have shechted privately to sell in the makolin, because most of the meat in town is from the Jewish butchers, and therefore that's good enough. We can go according to that road. And again, you have
okay, so that means
the means the shochtim. It means there's only Jewish shochtim. Yeah. If there was some goyish shochtim, then we're going to have a case soon with Teisha Chanuyas, where then you get into the matter of kavur. We'll get to that soon. But no, here we're talking about all the shochtim are Jews. Okay. So therefore, so Rebbe is saying it's not a problem just because this person did improperly selling a trefa and causing somebody else to be misled doesn't mean that we have to ask for the whole thing. Ikadamri, another version of the discussion goes Omar Rebbe. Another version of what Rebbe says. Do we say if Neshota Zed Ikavim Saure Lachavre, should we say that because of this Shota, who is Davka saying it in a way that he wants to make the other guy feel bad, where what he's saying is not even necessarily true? In the first version, we're saying, fine, we can accept that what he's saying is true, but the fact is we're saying he acted improperly, he acted against halacha, doesn't mean, therefore, that it creates the first version of what Rebbe said, that we're saying that because he acted improperly, should we, in other words, implying he really did it, he really did, he is telling the truth, he did say, he did shech the trefa and sell it to the guy. According to the second version, he's not even necessarily telling the truth. He may be the clown making up a story just to make the other guy feel bad. Yeah. So therefore, you're going to say because of that, and that's a column of colon. Are you going to say therefore that all the butcher shops that should be offered to buy meat from? No. So therefore, you're allowed to, as long as it says, Rashi again learns that we're talking about it's one of those places where normally when a trefa is sold, you're supposed to announce it, and here no announcement is made. We're not going to say therefore that we have a problem. Maybe this guy is selling without achraza, and therefore you should answer it. No, because according to the second version, we don't even know if he's telling the truth. It may bechlal have been kosher to meat that he sold to the guy, and yeah.
In the second version, there was no achraza.
That's the thing. In the second version, in both versions, there was no achraza. Again, that's according to Rashi. Other Rishonim learned that maybe we're talking about a place where there usually isn't achraza, and therefore the shoter who's buying is the second person, maybe because he has no business buying from a guy. Okay. All right. So the question is, so what are you telling me? Only in the second version, only if we're saying that we have reason to say that this butcher is b'chlal not even telling the truth, that he's only saying it in order to make the other guy feel bad, only therefore, according to that second version, are we implying that therefore you're allowed to buy meat from the guy? It seems to imply that if not, that if we had reason to think that he's telling the truth, then it should be osur. The question, according to that version, is, Valtanya, don't we learn in a braisa, which we just said before, Rebbe Omer, Makolin, B'tabcha Yisrael, that if the butcher shops, when they have butcher shops in town, and all the shochtim in town are Jewish, Boster and him to be at Erb Tuchav and Mutter, then meat that you find in the hands of a goy is Mutter. So according to that version, why would we care whether we think that the guy is lying or not? Even if he's telling the truth, it ought to be Mutter. And the answer is, Shaini Hocha, B'tabcha Yisrael. You could argue that here it's different. If we had reason to think that he's telling the truth, then the fact of the matter is we have a chazaka, there is an issue over here, because we know there was a trefa over here and this guy was careless and sold it to the guy. So then you already should have to be worried. Maybe in this version, if we knew that he's telling the truth, then already you have to worry about, well, now he sold one trefa to the goy without making hachraza. Who knows how many other ones he sold to goyim without making hachraza? Maybe we should have to be concerned. And Rebbe's saying no, just because he acted improperly doesn't mean that we have to after it for everybody else, according to the second version. So in both versions, again, according to Rashi, there's no hachraza. But in the first version, we're saying that, In the first version, we're saying, we know he's telling the truth, but nevertheless, he did sell a trefa. Nevertheless, though, that doesn't answer it for everybody else. We can still buy from the rest of the goyish or butcher shops in town. Okay. According to the second version, the only reason that makes it mutter is because we don't even know whether he's telling the truth. We have a good reason to think that he's only claiming that he sold a trefa in order to make the other guy feel bad, to make him think that he ate trefa. But if we had reason to think that he's telling the truth, then already you have a problem. Then already you may have to ask for the meat more widely, because he may well have sold like that to other people as well. Yeah. By the way, in this case of Itzchazik Yisura, you have an interesting machloikus about that between the Rashba and the Ra'ah. Does that mean that only from now on, once he says this, do we say we can't buy meat from those goyish butcher shops anymore? Or does it mean the Ra'ah learns it means even meat that you bought earlier that day from those shops is also going to be also? Because once you say there was a trefa, you don't know. You don't know how far back it goes, maybe. Okay.
So it's mostly about him telling the truth.
Well, according to the second version, it's about whether he's telling the truth or not. According to the first version, it's not. According to the first version, we accept that he's telling the truth. But nevertheless, since he anyway acted against the Takanas Chachamim, we're not worried that that kind of problem is more widespread. Right.
So what's the halacha?
The halacha we'll get to, because we first have to deal with another matter, which the Gemara is going to deal with now, called Bosesh and Isalim and Ayin, and afterwards then we'll be able to get back to, yeah. Okay. Omer Rav, Boser, Kibbutz, and Isalim and Ayin, Oser. Okay, so Rav says, here's a concept, that when meat has been hidden from the eye, if there's a period of time when it wasn't being watched by a Jew, Oser. Then it's also because it may have been swapped out for a nevela. Now Tosfos actually says we're talking even in a city like we're talking about before, where all or most of the butchers in town are Jews. Nevertheless, the problem is that so you're going to say in that case, so where does a goy get a hold of trefa meat? The problem is it may not even been a goy swapped it out. As the Gemara is going to go on to explain over here, it might be that a raven dropped off some meat that came from somewhere else, which might well be trefa meat. So that's what we're going to discuss, that whole point, and then we're going to relate that to Rebbe's din, and we're going to go on it for a while, and then eventually we'll see. Okay. So Mace, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. We just said, Rebbe Omer, Makolim, Betabas Yisrael. Rebbe says that the butcher shops and the shochtim in town are Jews. Basar anim to be at over to chavim mutter. Then any meat you find in a goy's hand is mutter, because the only place it could have come from is from the local Jewish shochtim. And by the way, I mean, we have to realize, obviously, we're talking about, like, in those days where, like, you know, you have a town and you don't have anything else for 5 miles around. You know, nobody's going and traveling that much intra-city. We're not talking about nowadays, you know, like Crown Heights versus Flatbush or whatever, you know, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the question is, so why is Rav saying that if meat has been out of sight for a while, then it's also, we see that Rebbe is saying if it's in the hands of a goyis mutter. The answer is nimtzav yad over kachavim shiny. Sure, but we would say it's different. Rav would agree that it's fine when it's in the hands of a goy, because, okay, it doesn't have to be Rav is saying that a Jew was watching it a whole time. It has to be that it was under some person's supervision. You know that he didn't shecht it, because in general the goyim in that town don't shecht themselves. Trefa, they didn't sell him because there was no hachraza. So the only question is, so therefore that's it. We know for a fact it has to be kosher meat. What Rav is talking about, Shabbosish and it's Alamina Ayin, is when you find a piece of meat where nobody was supervising it, you never know. A raven may have taken from a carcass someplace else and dropped it off over here. So that's what Rav is saying, is Bosish and it's Alamina Ayin also. Okay. It
doesn't happen every day.
It doesn't happen every day, but it happens, and therefore we have to worry about it. Okay. Okay, the truth is Tosfos says Chum Rav Alma. Tosfos says that, yeah, Rav is just being Machmir, but fine. Okay.
It's
fine. Toshma, we have a case in it, we have a famous case as follows. Tesha Chanuyas Kulam Mochus B'sar Shchuta. If you have in town 9 butcher shops, all of which sell B'sar Shchuta, kosher meat. It comes up in a few places in Shas. It is in Tzachim, as you can see in Masoros HaShas. It's also in Ksubas. Yeah. And in Ksubas, actually, there's a long story about it, about when you need 1 roiv, when you need 2 roiv. Yeah. Okay, so Pesha Chanui is Kulam Moichas Tzar Shchuta, the Achas Mecheres Tzar Nevela. One store in town sells Nevela meat, which is Teref. The Lokach Me'achas Mehen. Now a person went and bought meat from one of these stores. The Eini Adam Me'ez Mehen Lokach. Now he doesn't realize, now he can't think afterwards which one he bought from.
Yeah,
I mean, Jews are not allowed to sell Nevela. It's a regular thing, but whatever it is, doesn't matter, yeah. So he doesn't know from which store he bought. Sfeikai Osir. Then because of the suffix, it's author. Ah, you're going to say it's a 9 in 10 chance that it's kosher. No, because the stores are kavua. The stores, each one of them is fixed in place, and we have a concept in halacha called kol kavua k'mechsal mechadomi. When you have a case of kavua, when you have everything is in its original place, and then you say that's a 50-50 chance, whether it's also or mutter. In other words, in effect, what it is when you're talking about things that are not in their place, as the next case that we're going to talk about, then we say, okay, 9 out of the 10 butcher shops are kosher. So that's the difference. The difference is we have, it's actually a Xeris HaKosuv, that Kol, the Gemara talks about it in Yuma and Ksubas, that Kol Kavua K'mechzal Mechzadomi, but that's how it is. When you have Kavua, then we say, effectively, what we say is it's not a 9-to-1 chance, it's a 1-to-1 chance that it's kosher or trait. And therefore, as a topic, it's trait. Yeah.
Why? I'm trying to understand why it would be more.
I saw a svara on it, something along the lines of that when it's kavua, then we say, in effect, we say there's only 2 possible outcomes. It's either kosher or it's tzrei, and that's 50-50. As opposed to when it's not kavua, then we say, okay, which of the places did it come from? Did it come from the 9 or did it come from the 1? And 9 beats 1. But over here, where it's kavua, the stores themselves are where they are, and therefore the suffix came up. The suffix is based on where you bought it from. That's kavua. So therefore, it's a 50-50 chance.
So could be because they take away the same supplier?
No, not necessarily. The point is that you know that 9 of them sell kosher and 1 sells trefa, and then yeah. Over nimta holachacha arayz. On the other hand, the braisa continues. If you find a piece of meat in such a city, then you can go according to the roiv. And roiv is kosher, and therefore you can assume this meat is kosher. Now, according to Rav, if Basar Shenis Alam in Ayin is author, then if you find meat, then you should consider it treif anyway, because Basar Shenis Alam in Ayin and a raven might have dropped it or whatever. The answer is, Hochanami b'nimtza b'yad erkechavim.
But it's
Well, the point is, you don't know. It's not just fine. That's the question. Rav is saying boser shenis alam min ha'ayin aser. So if according to him nimsa, you find a piece of meat in the street or whatever, why are you saying that it must have come from one of the 10 butcher shops in town, and 9 of them sell kosher meat, and therefore you have a 9-to-1 chance, and Rav tells you that it's kosher. It's still boser shenis alam min ha'ayin. It was out of sight for a while, and therefore maybe it was dropped there by a raven. The answer is, that Rav will explain that braisa is also nimsa doesn't mean you found it in the street. It means you found it in the possession of a goy. So again, it was under human control the whole time. There's no possibility that a raven dropped it off. So we know this goy bought it from somewhere. 9 out of 10 chance he bought it from one of the butcher shops. If you, a yid, bought from one of the butcher shops and now you have a suffix, that's when they say kavua. But if the goy bought from one of them and you find it by him, that's not kavua anymore, because where the suffix came up was already after it's out of the stores. After the suffix has to do with. So therefore it's not kavua anymore. But that's the thing. Rav is saying boser shenis alam min ha'ayin aser. But we're explaining so far that what Rav means by that, at least the way the Gemara is explaining so far, is strictly when there's a possibility that a raven or some other animal brought it over there. Not when it's in human hands and it's been in human hands the whole time, and we know he bought it someplace locally. Okay. Another case, Toshma. The Mishnah says, Masa ba boser. If you have, now you have a city where there's both Jews and goyim living there. So the Mishnah says, if you find meat in such a city, what do you do? Is it kosher or is it treif? Im chai, if the meat is raw, halachah harov tabachin, then fine, you can go according to the majority of butchers. If most of the butchers in town are Jewish, then you have the same thing. If you go according to Rav, it's not kavua because you found the meat. It's not that you bought from one of them and you don't know which one. Therefore, you go according to most of them. And if most of them are Jews, then the meat is kosher. But if it's cooked, then you have to go based on the majority of people in the city who eat meat. Then you have a problem. A goy might have cooked it in a bishul akel. So the question is, according to Rav, again, why should it be mutter if it's raw? Because most of the butchers in town are Jewish. Isn't it boser shenis alam min ha'ayin? V'chitema, so you're going to answer, hachanami b'nimta b'yad erb t'chavim. So you're going to answer, same as the previous times that we said, that nimta over here doesn't mean you found it in the street. It means that you found it in the hands of a goy. And the only question, therefore, is who he bought it by. Well, in that case,
The question is, you find it in the hands of a boy, automatically you should say it's treif.
Why? Maybe he bought kosher meat in one of the local butcher shops.
Maybe not.
Again, if most of the butchers in town are Jews, again, we're assuming that we're talking about a case where we're not talking about a case where people travel from this town to another town very commonly. And mind you, I mean, even if they did, they're not usually going to bring meat from another town because, you know, they didn't have refrigeration or anything in those days. It would spoil. So the kosher meat that they're buying is local. And there's also, you know, based on what we mentioned earlier in the sugya, you know, you can tell the difference between meat that was shechted today versus yesterday. It's already not quite as fresh or whatever. So no, we're talking about a situation where we know for a fact he got it somewhere in town. So the only question would be, did he get it from one of the shechtim? Or as Tosfos says, maybe he shechted privately in his, maybe he killed an animal privately in his backyard. Fine, but there's not enough of that to go against the roiv of the shechtim in town being Jewish. So if you're going to say, again, that Rav is saying that why is this meat mutter? Because you found it in the hands of a goy. In other words, again, it was under human control the whole time, and therefore, you know, a raven didn't fly over from someplace else and drop it. Well, the problem with that is, what do you mean, mevushal holochach haroiv oichle boser? So what do we mean? That it continues, that if the meat is cooked, then you have to see how many people in town eat meat and go according to the majority of them, because whoever's the majority of that, we can assume is the one who cooked it. V'nechzi, let's just look. If we're talking about that it's in somebody's hands, does a goy have this piece of meat? Then he's probably the one who cooked it. And if a Jew has this piece of meat, probably he's the one who cooked it. So why would we have to look at the roiv of the people in town who eat meat?
How would we know if a Jew had it or the goy?
Again, what does it mean, nimsa? We assumed, for purposes of the question, that nimsa means you're walking along the street and you find a piece of meat.
Right.
Now Rav is telling us that, no, nimsa means that you find a piece of meat in somebody's house, or you find them holding it or whatever. Well then, if it's cooked, Why are we just going according to Roy Oakley Buster? Why are we thinking, okay, this is a town that has 1,000 people, 600 of whom, let's say, 800 eat meat, because the rest of them are old people or little kids or whatever who don't. And out of that 800, let's say 500 are Jews and 300 are Goyim. Therefore, we can assume it was Jewish. Why would you do like that? Which particular person did you find this meat by? Is it a Jew or is it a Goy? Usually the person who has cooked meat is the one who cooked it. So how can Rav understand the Braisa as we talking about, the Mishnah rather, as talking about that you found it in somebody's hands? Wouldn't it be more logical that it's talking that you found it in the street after it was cooked,
yes,
and therefore the question now becomes who cooked it, because you don't know?
Right.
The answer is, Chochav Ma'aseh and Ba'omid B'rei Eihu. Yes, but what you can be talking about is that, sure, you found it in the street, but you saw it from when the person dropped it. You had your eyes on it from when the person dropped it. You don't know. So now, when it was in somebody's possession, then it's not osir. In the case of the raw meat, in other words, again, in the case of cooked meat, fine. You have to consider how many people are in there in town. In the case of raw meat, it's strictly a matter of the number of shochtim. So if somebody drops a piece of raw meat, so if a person dropped a piece of raw meat in such a place, and let's say it's a case obviously where as a matter of Eilu Messias, it's not an issue either because it's a case where there was Yerush or whatever. So the only question is so then it doesn't matter who dropped it, whether it was a Jew or it was a Goy. Either way, it came from one of the local butchers in town, and most of them are Jews, and therefore it's Mutter. Rav will say that's not Basrish and it's Alam and Ayin because again before it was under his control, he was holding it, then he dropped it, you were watching from when it was dropped until you came over and picked it up, so there's no problem with ravens.
Any other case,
if you're talking about that you just found it in the street, then yes, there's a problem, a raven might have dropped it off. So we're not talking nimtza b'yad ovid kechavim, we are talking about you found it in the street. That is why if it's cooked, you go according to roiv of the meat eaters in the city, because then you don't know who cooked it and who dropped it.
To make a sense of the meat eater.
Yeah, you have to figure out. Again, if we're not talking a city like New York or whatever, we're talking about a small town. We're talking a shtetl, a couple hundred people. You know how many people there are in it.
It's mostly maybe you
Yeah, whatever. Everybody knows everybody else's business. You know how many Okay. Fine. All right. Onward. So still no proof against Rav yet, because each of these Mishnayos and Braisas he has an answer to. Okay. Toshma, come, let's prove from another case. The Mishnah tells us in Shkolim. Now, the Mishnah starts off talking like this. It starts in Shkolim, in the context over there, it's talking about dinim involving kodshim. So it mentions the case if you find pieces of meat in the Azara, and you don't know what kind of korban they came from, so you can't be sure. Did they come from an Ola? Then in that case, you have to burn them on the Mizbeach. Or even if you don't, okay, they're possible because they were out of sight. Whatever the point is, you can't eat them. If you eat meat from an ola, you're over on a loisa. On the other hand, if it's from a shlomim or some other carbon, then you're allowed to eat. I don't remember which loisa said. I think loisa chalecha b'sharecha. I don't remember exactly. Whatever it is, there's a loisa said that you're not allowed to eat from an ola. Anyway, if it's from some other carbon, then you're allowed to. So the Mishnah describes how you tell the difference. But then the Mishnah continues, Nimtza b'gvulin, now a related case, what if you find meat anywhere outside of Beis Mikdash? Then Evorim Nevelus, if you find whole limbs, then you have to assume the Nevelus, because you cut a Nevela or a Trefa into limbs and just throw it into the garbage, because why should you bother cutting it up into slices? You're not going to be eating it anyway. Chatichos Mutoris, but if you find sliced pieces of meat, then they're Mutar. Obviously, we're talking about when most of the butchers are Jews. And why would anybody have bothered cutting it into slices? Obviously, because they plan to eat it, so therefore it's kosher. Again, the question is, according to Rav, isn't it basrish and it's alam and ayin? What do you mean? It still might have been a piece of meat from some other town where the shachtim are goyim, and a raven picked it up from there and dropped it off over here. V'chitema hachanami ba'omid b're'ehu. So you're going to answer like we answered in the previous case that you're talking about where we saw somebody drop it, and then we watched it until we picked it up. Well, then the question is, Evorim Nevelus am I? So then why should we say that if it's large limbs, that not cut into slices, why should we say that it's Nevela? Same thing. In other words, why would we have to assume that it's Nevela? You didn't find it in the garbage. If you find it in the garbage, sure, obviously it's Nevela. But if you see somebody carrying it, why should you have to assume that it's Nevela? And you saw somebody carry it, then he dropped it, and you go and pick it up, why should you have to assume that it was a piece of Nevela? The answer is midu hutaima elulav. Yeah, but come on, who are you asking the question? Who are you trying to figure out the Mishnah according to? You're asking according to Rav. Ha itmar Allah, and you should know that there's actually a discussion on that Gemara, a discussion of Amoraim. Rav Amar Mutaris Mishum Nebela, that Rav says what it means is when we say that the slices are mutter, we don't mean they're mutter to eat. All we mean is they don't have the din of nevela. If they touch other food, they don't make it tameh. If a person eats it, he's not chayav malchus for eating nevela. It's not mutter to actually eat, because indeed it's basar shenatalam and ayin. Whereas if it was actually evarim, then we would assume that it's nevela, and we would give it a chazaka of nevela, and even give him malchus for eating it, and say that it would be matame other food, etc. So we're not talking about a case where you saw somebody drop it. We're talking about you find a piece of it in the street. So if it's a varim, the likelihood is that it's nevela, because they wouldn't bother cutting it into pieces. There's enough of a chazaka on that your person could even get malchus for eating it. If it's slices, fine, it's not nevela, because nobody would have bothered cutting into slices, but you still have the problem that it might be chedefer or whatever, and therefore you're still not allowed to eat it. It just wouldn't have the dinim of nevela as far as toma and as far as malchus. The Levi Amar Mutaris Ba'Achila, whereas Levi disagrees, because Levi holds that there's no problem with Rav. Yeah, they're both Amoraim, they're entitled to disagree with each other. So Levi disagrees with that concept, and he says that Basar Shenis Alam and Ayin is Mutter. Why not? Rav was saying, we mentioned that Rav says Basar Shenis Alam and Ayin also. Levi disagrees with that. He says that it's not a problem. We're not worried about ravens. We'll see as we go through the Sugya, but whatever. The point is, he's entitled to hold that we don't have to worry about ravens. I mean, again, Tosafot had mentioned before that even Rav's idea is really only a chumra ba'almu. So therefore, Levi is entitled to disagree with that. Okay. And fine. Okay. Why? You could say you find a piece of meat in the street. Again, where all or most of the butchers in town are Jews. Roiv tells you that it came from a Jewish butcher. Ravens we're not worried about, according to Levi. So therefore, we're good. Okay, and the Gemara points out, v'hoder Rav, now actually this statement of Rav that we've been discussing this whole time, that Basar Shenis Alam and Ayin Asur, lav b'feirush itmar. Hold on, hold that thought. Lav b'feirush itmar ela miklali itmar. Rav did not say that explicitly, rather we deduce it from a story involving Rav. We had something similar yesterday with Shmuel about Gnevat Das, and now we have a similar thing about Rav that he never actually said in so many words, Basar Shenis Alam and Ayin Asur, rather we deduce it from a story involving him. Uh-huh. Name.
And that story is on
conclusion. One second, let's see. Do Rav have a Yosef Amabra di Ishtatis? One time Rav was sitting on the bridge or on the ferry of Ishtatis. Ishtatis is the name of a river. Mabra can mean Mabra. Rashi says Mokam Mavar Shalaisan Nahar, so it can mean that he was sitting on the bridge or on the ferry. It can also mean he was sitting by the ford of the river. Whatever it is, he was there. He was there by the river. Chazalahu Gavra Davakom Chaver Resha. He saw a certain person there by the river was washing the head of an animal to rinse it off of the blood and dirt and whatever. They're washing it in the river. Nafomine, then the guy dropped the head.
Yeah.
To have a machaver resha. He was cleaning. He was cleaning and machaver means to clean. Yeah.
What's the root?
And the root of it is chiver, which means white. So to clean something, that's a white. And Rashi says machaloy madicha b'mayim. He's rinsing it and then cleansing it with water. Nafomine, the guy dropped the head into the water. Although Icy Silta, then he didn't want to give up on the head. He went and brought a basket, Shudder, and he threw the basket. He cast the basket into the river to try and get the head. Shudder, Asik Train, and what do you know? In the basket there came up two heads. Omar Rav Abdi Nami Ochi. So Rav says, is that the way things work? You lose one thing and you find two other ones. In other words, the logic is that neither one of these is the original head that he lost. So therefore, Asrinu Niale, and he said, he told the guy, those heads are also to you to eat. So in other words, we seem to see from the story that Basar Shenis Alam and Ayin also. Why is Rav saying it's also? Because it was hidden from sight, and therefore you don't know where it came from. Amri le Rav Kahana of Rav Asi le Rav. So Rav Kahana and Rav Asi asked Rav, why should you say it's also? The Isura Shchichi, the Hetera lo Shchichi. So what are you going to say? Heads that are, of animals that are also are more common are more common than ones of heter? Why should we assume that?
The pashtus doesn't go by either one.
No. 1 second. Well, that's what we have to ask. The Rav tells them, actually, no. Ones that are osir are more common. So therefore, in other words, there's reason to think that it's osir. So therefore, so we see from this story that Rav hold, why does Rav hold basar shenis alam min ayin osir? Because when you consider the amount of meat that there is in the world, even if in this particular area you have the shochtim are Jews, but that doesn't, that the whole world is not necessarily like that. In aggregate in the world, you have more. Okay. So therefore, fine. So the question is, as the Gemara asked yesterday, why is it important for us to know that we deduce the Rav Din from this story? It seems to be a valid deduction. So why do we have to tell the story in order to establish that's where we learn the Din from? The answer is, again, it's not necessarily a valid deduction, because in this particular case, it was an area where most of the butchers are Jews. However, it was a port. It was a port where there were many goyim, and therefore, as a port like that, so then you have the current of the river is likely to bring meat from many other places, and then but you have many goyim come and go in that port, and they may have dropped heads of animals also. So therefore, in other words, you could argue maybe in a normal case where the only concern about Bosish and it's alam and ayin is that a raven may have picked up a piece of meat in one place and dropped it over here. Maybe Rav would not be machmir like that. Over here, where you have Tavosa, the Ovid Yechavim, where you have the port where goyim are always coming and going, maybe that's different, and that maybe only then is Rav machmir. Okay. Teja, and in fact, you can prove that from the story. Because in fact, Rav points out to them, so when Rav Kahana and Rav Asi asked him, he points out to them that heads of Isser are more common. So therefore, obviously, we must be talking about a case where there's really reason to think that they're more common. So we're not just talking about more common in the world in general. We're talking about more common in this particular area. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Nevertheless, the Gemara accepts that Rav does hold Bostish and his alam in ayin osir, even if we can't deduce it from the story. The Gemara knew the Kabbalah that Rav holds this way. Question is, Ella Rav Hechi Ochel Bistra Hechi. So the story not necessarily goes against. In other words, there's no proof from the story one way or the other. However, you could say that in that particular case, because it was in that particular case, Rav may be telling them, even you maybe who aren't worried about ravens, nevertheless, in this case, you have to agree that it's also because it's a port that's frequented by goyim. But he himself might hold that even if it weren't for that factor, it would be also anyway. Tosfos says as much. So Tosfos says, if the guy had only picked up one head, then Rav would have said that, okay, there's no ravens over there. It's less likely that he lost one and then found a different one.
And then
Rav would have said it's mutter. Now over here that he found two, then you have a problem. You still might have that a raven may have dropped it off from someplace else. And therefore,
that seems to be going against Abasa.
No, so that's the point. So Bosash and Isalam and Ayin is author. When there's reason to worry about ravens, over here, at least in the Hava Amina of the Gemara, there wasn't. In the Maskana, we're saying that actually it was a port of Goyim, and therefore there's a different reason to after it. But had it, in the original story, when we started telling it, we didn't yet know it was a port of Goyim. If he had only found one, then we might have said that Rav might have been master for him.
So it's only when it's raven?
Yeah, that's the point. The whole reason that Rav was saying, Bostosh and Balaam and Ayin, is also so far is because of ravens. Or any other.
He considers the ravens to be everywhere.
Ravens are common enough. I mean, you have to realize maybe we're not used to seeing them around nowadays, but that's because you don't have a lot of carcasses lying around. In those days, when first of all transport was with animals, and people are shechting animals not just in Schlachthausen but all over the place and whatever, and there's no refrigeration, and ravens were probably a lot more common.
So today you would say it's
mutter? No, not necessarily. But the point is that okay, fine. But we'll talk about soon what the actual halacha is. We'll get to actual halacha later. But, okay, fine. So the question is, Ela Rav Hechi Ochel Bistra. So in that case, how does Rav ever eat meat? If Rav holds Bosash and Salam and Ayin is also, then how is he ever able to eat meat? The answer is b'shaite. Either he eats meat only right after it's shechted, so then nobody's eye, so then there was never somebody's eyes taken off it. That's one possibility. He bites. No, not necessarily. You could eat. I don't know today. Rav doesn't live today. Rav lives there. So therefore, so you could say that's one possibility how Rav was able to eat meat. Another possibility, he bites aim of a side of a chasuma. Another possibility is Rav would be master it if it. Sealed, if tied up and sealed, so therefore there's no possibility that it was swapped out. The inami b'simona.
Well, that's on Chiddush.
Okay, nevertheless, we were asking how Rav was able to eat, and the answer is Rav had practical ways of doing it. The inami b'simona. Yet another way that would be mutter is if you have a simon on the meat. Namely, you can have a simon that it was cut a certain way, and therefore you can recognize that it's the same piece of meat.
That's that? Is it simon?
One second. Kihod Rava Barabhuna Machatichlat Layatlas Karnosa. For example, Rava Barabhuna would cut meat into triangles. So the point is, in other words, when the Gemara mentions it in Eila Matthias, actually. So actually, Rashi over here explains that the point of him doing that was not so much because of Tashrus reasons. The reason is he wanted a simon so that members of his household don't taste it. This way, if he sees any member of his household, like a servant or whatever, taking a piece of meat that's cut in a triangle shape, then he knows they took it from his stash of meat. Rashi in other places. Okay, but I guess he had a certain way of cutting it. That's that's how Rashi explains it over here. In other places, for example, in Bava Metzia, Rashi explains he did it as a matter of kashrus. When he was sending meat to the Goyish courier, he would do that. He would cut it in a certain shape, and that way he would cut it in a certain shape, and that way we know that it's being received, that the same thing is being received at the other end. So you're asking about stamps. So actually, first of all, there is a trova from Ramosha where he talks about, that, for example, if you have meat that's sold in packages, where in such a way that the packaging is that the packaging can't be forged, then yes, you would be allowed to. We don't have to worry that the goy forged the seal and then swapped it out. I've seen there's interesting. Mam Lawyers tells a couple of interesting stories in this connection. One story he tells is there were places in Turkey and other areas near there or whatever where they used to send meat with Goyish couriers. And what they would do is they would carve into the meat the word kosher, and that would have been a sin. The problem is eventually the Goyish couriers learned how to copy that. So then the Jews came up with a better idea. They would carve in the name of the parasha of the week. So by the time the goy figures out how to write the name of the parasha, it'll be the next week already. So therefore, that was a little more foolproof. Except he continues. I think he's quoting from Snes Sagdola. I'm not sure. Anyway, he continues. One time though, there was a goy took the piece that had the piece of meat that had those words carved into it and cut that part off and attached it to another piece of meat. So then they had to make a tachana. You have to be careful. You have to check that it's actually part of the same piece of meat and not just like glued on or whatever. But, yeah. Continues the Gemara. Rav have a ka'oza lebeir of Chanan chasne. Rav was one time going to the house of Rav Chanan, his son-in-law. Chazi mabra de ka'osi lape. He saw, when he was on the way, he saw a ferry that he needed to take a ferry to cross the river. He saw the ferry coming in his direction. Omar, so he said, that's a good simon. Yoim mabra ka'osi lape. The ferry is coming to greet me. Therefore, that's a simon, and the Gemara is going to ask soon how you make such simonim, yoyma tova legoy. It means there's a yomtov inside. In other words, it's a simon. That the ferry is coming exactly when I need it. It's a simon that at my destination, there's going to be a yomtov. There's going to be a celebration going on. Okay, so it sounds a little bit like, nichush, and the Gemara is going to deal with that soon. It sounds like superstition, so we'll get to that soon, anyway. In other words, Rashi explains, usually you would have to make a reservation for the ferry, so it'll be there at a certain time. Like this, it happens to be coming just when he needs it. So yeah, so he says the good thing. Also, comma, baba. So Rav eventually got to his son-in-law's house. He went and stood by the door, and he looked in, he looked in through a crack in the door. And he saw there was a shechted animal hanging over there inside the house. So Rav knocked on the door. They opened the door. Oh, Rav is here, and everybody came out to greet the great Tamar Chacham and the great Tzaddik Rav. Everybody who was in the house came out to greet him, and nobody's watching the meat. Also Tabchinami, and also the butchers, also the shochtim, who are responsible for the meat, also came out to greet Rav. Loy olim Rav eine mine. So Rav did not take his eyes off that meat. Nobody else is watching it, so he made sure to keep his eyes on it the whole time. Amalahu, and he tells them, Echu Hashta, look at this. If it was going to depend now only on your watching, then it would have been a problem, because now we would have had a case of Bustash and a Salam and a Ayin. Sufisu Lahu Isura L'Bnei Bras, then you would have ended up giving something that's also to my grandchildren, because there was Bustash and a Salam and a Ayin. Sufisu, you would have given. Echu Hashta, had it been now like this, in other words, if I hadn't been watching, then this meat, according to my shita, would have been also, and you would have been giving it to my grandchildren. Tosfos points out, sufisu means to give. Yeah. We had the root is sofo, which means to add or something. I don't know, whatever. It means to give. So, maybe. Okay. Tosfos points out, actually, even now, this is not an absolute proof that Rav holds Bosish and it's Alam and Ayin is also, because it might be that in this particular town, most of the butchers were goyim. Nevertheless, though, okay. Yeah, okay. Well, the upshot is loy ocho rav me'ahu bistro. The upshot is Rav did not end up eating from that meat. That's we have to figure out. My timer. Now, why should that be? E mishum yalumi.
Right.
Oh, you're going to say the reason is because it was bostish and phallum and iron. Can't be. Holo ilim. The fact is it wasn't. Rav kept his eye on it the whole time. Ela d'nachish. So you're going to say maybe the reason is that Rav wanted to be machmer on himself because he had realized that he had done wrong by doing nichush with the matter of the ferry. That maybe therefore he realized, like, to compensate, therefore he's going to be machmer on himself. The problem is, what's the problem with it? V'ha'amar Rav, Rav himself says, Kol nachash she'ene keli ezer evad Avraham u'kiyonis and ben shol, enoi nachash. Rav himself says that if it's not a nichush like Eliezer, like what Eliezer did, and like what Yonasan did, 1 second, I'll explain. Then it's not a nachash. Now this line and a half, kol nachash she'ena keli ezer evad Avraham u'kiyonis ben shol, enoi nachash. There's probably as many different explanations of Rishonim as there are words in the phrase. What is going on with it? First, that's what we have to figure out. First of all, okay, let's talk about, okay, what is the nichush we're talking about? Okay, so Eliezer, we have like this. We know the famous story. He comes to the well in Haran. He says, whichever girl comes and offers water for myself and my camel, then she's the one who's the worthy wife for you. The story with Yonathan is in Shmuel Aleph. You have Avram told him to get a girl from his family. Avram didn't tell him to make such a simon. Eliezer made such a simon. He's the one. He came up on his own. That whichever girl offers me this water, etc. Okay. Well, the story with Yonathan in Shmuel Aleph, you had a period over there. There was a war going on between the Plishtim and the Jewish people. You have the Plishtim have a much more powerful army. The Jews, the Jewish army, most of them were afraid, and Shaul has only 600 people with him. So Yonathan and his arms bearer one day set out, and Yonathan says, let's go climb up to the Plishti, to the Plishti garrison over here, and let's see what happens. If when they see us, they tell us, stay right there, then we'll take that as a sin, and that we should stop right there, and that we're not going to be successful. If they tell us, come on up over here and we'll fight with you, then it'll be a simon that will be successful. Sure enough, they go and do that, and the Plishtim said, oh, look, the Jews are climbing out of their holes. Come on up here and we'll show you a thing or two. And Yonathan says to his arms here, that's it. It shows that Hashem is going to help us defeat them, and sure enough, that's the beginning of a great victory over the Plishtim. So that's the nichush that we're talking about right here. Now, the obvious question is, if we're saying that this is nichush, forget about Rav for a second. How is Eliezer allowed to do it? How is Yonathan allowed to do it? So that's what I'm saying. You have, how many words do you have in this phrase? Kol nachash she'enek Eliezer evad Avraham uch Yonathan ben shol enoi nachash, 11 words. I think you have at least as many explanations among Rishonim and Achronim of this phrase as the number of words in the phrase. But among others, first of all, Tosfos talks about that. So Tosfos starts by asking, okay, let's start with Rashi, actually. So Rashi explains that kol nachash she'enoi means that if a person is not completely soymech on it, in other words, like Eliezer was soymech on his nachash, he said, if the girl offers water to drink, etc., then I'll know she's the right one, and then I'll ask her if she's interested in marrying Yitzchak, and if not, then not. Yonathan also seems to be saying, if the Plishtim say X, then I'll do Y, and if they don't say X, then I won't do Y. So that seems nichlish. It seems to be a superstitious thing. So therefore, the Tosfos starts by asking the question, you could, first of all, never mind Yonason for a second, what about even Eliezer? You have an opinion in Sanhedrin that says that a goy is not allowed to do such things either. And they're Ben Noach. He's an Eved Kanani, but it's fine. An Eved Kanani is chayiv in the same mitzvah as Jews, but this is before Matan Torah. So before Matan Torah, everybody's Ben Noach. So Tosfos actually answers that in the case of Eliezer, now, we have like this. In the Pesukim, what does it say? Eliezer asks her for the water for himself and his camels. She does that. Then the Pesuk says he gave her the rings and the bracelets and whatever. Then he asks her from what family she is, and she says, I'm from the family of Bethuel, and he realizes that she is Tasha from Abraham's family. Tosfos says that's not actually the order that things happen. First he asked her what family she's from, then he gave her the rings and whatnot. Therefore, it's not Nichush. Nichush would have been, says Tosfos, if he had first given her the rings, etc., as it seems from the surface meaning of the Pesukim, then it would be Nichush, because he's solely relying on the simon of his. But like this, where he first asked her what family she's from, okay, he's, you know, that's fine, that was his mission. And as far as Yonason, one second, there's many explanations, hold on. Then Tosfos says, as far as Yonason is after Matan Torah, you don't have any excuses, the answer is, that Yonason would have gone up either way. He's just telling this to make his arms bearer feel better about it. But like this, if they say, come on up to us, and which in fact they did, then he tells the guy, look at that. It's obviously, but in other words, Yonason would have been ready to go up either way, so therefore it's not Nichush because he's not making it depend on. Now, you have the Rambam writes about this, that you know, the Rambam writes about this, the Rambam also takes it, that what we mean over here is that we're saying that what Eliezer and what Yonason did is osur, and the Rived naturally is osur because it's considered Nichush, and of course the Rived shturims against the Rambam, as he very often does, Shibush Godol, tremendous mistake, how could you think that Eliezer and Yonason, the Tzadikim, would do Nichush, which is osur, if they were to read what you're saying, they would bring out Kulsi Genurad, Shibush Godol, it's a tremendous mistake. Shibush is a mistake, yeah. So the Rived says that, and if they were to see what the Rambam is writing about them, they would bring out Kulsi Genurad, they'd bring out fiery lashes against him, etc. So the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam talk about a few possibilities, including that you could say that, first of all, you could say, similar to what Tosfos is saying over here, that in both Eliezer's and in Yonason's case, they're not exclusively relying on their simon. They have other factors as well. Yonason is going to do it either way. Eliezer first asks her what family she's from. You have a lot of other answers, including that maybe it's only Nichush if you say both things. If they do this, then if this happens, then I'm going to do this. And if this does not happen, I'm not going to do it. Whereas by Eliezer and by Yonason, they didn't say so in so many words, that if not, then I'm not going to do it. It would be Nichush if you say, for example, if they do, if A, then I'm going to do B, and if not A, then I'm not going to do B. That would be Nichush. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is, I think the Ran says, is that it's only Nichush if the Simen has nothing to do with what you're looking for. In this case, for example, whether if she gives water or not is a very relevant simon to know whether she's a suitable wife for Yitzchak. If the Plishtim are saying, come on up to us versus stay there, that shows. In other words, it's very relevant because it shows whether they're confident or not. If they,
so if you said if a color of hair is brown, I'm going to do this, and a color of hair is not brown, I'm going to.
Let's say then that would, according to that way of looking at it, that would be Nichush. That would have been Nichush. But if you're doing something that's relevant, then it's not. There's many, many other explanations, including also, so you have also another explanation actually is that what the Gemara means to say is that in order, the Gemara is just telling us a practical fact, in other words, that you know what kind of thing is even in the category of Nichush is something reliable, like what Yonason did and what Eliezer did. If it's like something that's not even really reliable, then it doesn't even really fall into the category of Nichush. So like I said, there's a lot of different explanations about what this means exactly. Anyway, the point is, with Rav also, for example, so Rav is not saying, if the ferry doesn't come, then I'm not going to go, for example. So it's good according to that. It could also be he's thinking about it. He's not necessarily saying it. That's another answer, that maybe he's only thinking it in his mind. There's also there's a logical consideration over here, because if you see the ferry coming right away, then it shows that Hashem is making your trip successful. So according to all the different versions, Rav did not do Nichush. So therefore, the point is, so why would Rav have a problem eating from this meat? So the answer is El Sudat Harashus Haboy. No. So the answer is, why didn't Rav eat from this meat? Nothing to do with Basar Shenefal Minayin. Nothing to do with Nichush. Rather, it's because it was a Sudat Harashus. It was a Suda, which is not a Sudat Mitzvah. For example, Rashi says that it was a wedding where the daughter of a Talmud Chacham was marrying an Amoret, which is not considered a Sudat Mitzvah, because a daughter of a Talmud Chacham should really be marrying another Talmud Chacham. And the Rav, Loi Mitani, the Suda Sarashus, Rav would never have Hana from such a Suda, so that's why he didn't eat the meat. Nothing to do with Basar Shenis Alam and Ayin.
He could not enjoy Simchat.
He would hold that you only eat from a Suda if it's a Suda Mitzvah. So if it's the daughter of a Talmud Chacham marrying the Talmud Chacham, that's a Mitzvah.
It's a wedding.
No, but nevertheless, it's not. The Gemara in Pesachim calls it a Suda Sarashus. When it's a wedding, that really shouldn't be taking place.
So then every wedding that we have, it should be Suda Sarashus.
Is a Bas Talmud Chacham typically marrying an Amoret? No. Yes. Typically, yeah, a Bas Talmud Chacham is marrying a Bas Talmud Chacham. So yeah. Okay. But that's the point. That was a personal chumra that Rav had for himself that he wouldn't eat from a Suda Sarashus. Okay, so since we're talking about Nichush, so the Gemara digresses for a little bit to talk about this concept. Rav Yochanan Rav Bodik the Mabra, Rav, as we said, would check whether he's going to be successful based on the ferry, see if the ferry is coming, as we said. Actually, the Ein Eliyahu, one of the Mepharshim on Ein Yaakov, has a different explanation. He says that you have a Gemara in Shabbos where it says Rav would never travel on a ship where there was a goy as a passenger as well. The reason is, because he said, what happens if Hashem decided that goy needs to be punished for some aveda that he did? So what's going to happen? The ship is going to sink, and I'm going
to
be on it.
So if Hashem is a yid, that Hashem decides has to be punished.
Fine, Rav felt that with a yid, it's different. Okay, I mean, you know, a yid Rav's chosid might help him in that case. Anyway, that's a bit more... Okay, obviously other people hold differently. In fact, the Gemara there says that Shmuel held exactly the opposite, that the Sultan is not able to have control over two different nations at once. So therefore, Adarabah, Shmuel would make sure to go on a ferry where there were goyim on it. That way, it's more of an insurance policy. Okay, anyway, the point is that, so Ein Eliyahu explains, Rav Bodik B'Mabra means exactly that. In other words, he would check the passenger list of the ferry before he would go on it. Okay. Shmuel Bodik B'Sifra, Shmuel would check on something whether he's going to be successful using a sefer. He would look for a pasuk in a sefer. There's actually a famous thing like that called the Goyal Agra. We open up a sefer, and then we open up a sefer and look for the first pasuk that comes up. There's a famous story involving Rabbi Levin about 70 years ago, where after one particular battle in the Israeli War of Independence, there were a number of Jews killed and a number of Jewish soldiers killed in that battle, and afterwards they couldn't identify all the bodies. So Rabbi Levin used the Goyal Agra to identify the most of them they were able to identify. He used the Goyal Agra and found appropriate psukim. It's a whole complicated thing. It involves using a certain print of Tanakh, and you say certain tefillos and whatever, and then you open it up and see what pasuk comes up first on the page or something. It's similar, actually. It's similar. So the fact when we open up, when we write letters to the Rebbe nowadays and we put them in the Igros, it's a similar idea. Yeah, it's a similar idea. So that goes back to, Sidim in Russia used to do that when they couldn't write directly to the Rebbe. Yeah. So the point is, there is this concept of using a sefer and seeing from that what's going to happen.
It's not considered nichush.
That's the point. It's not considered, obviously, if Shmuel is doing it, it's not considered nichush. That's the point. Again, so Rav did something else. Rav did the ferry. We're saying that each one had their own way of doing it. Again, there are different reasons why they're not nichush, including, again, because you're not necessarily saying the converse, that if I find something bad, then I'm not going to do it, because it is directly connected, because there is a logical connection, because...
When you say you find something, then you do it, but you don't say...
That's one way of looking at it, is you don't say the converse explicitly, right? Okay, Rabbi Yochanan Bodik B'Yanuka, and Rabbi Yochanan would check things out, whether it's going to be successful with children, meaning he would ask a kid to tell him, what pasuk did you just learn? We're coming up to Purim now. You have the famous story with Mordechai and the three children. Yeah. So here's an... Yeah, okay. So here's an example of that. Kula shli de Rav, throughout all the years when Rav was alive, have a kosevle Rav Yechanan l'kodem Rabbeinu shebabavo. Rav Yechanan would write, when he wrote letters to Rav, he would address them to our Rebbe in Babel, because we've learned that to Rav, because we've learned a couple of times in the Masechta, and we're going to learn again towards the end, that Rav was a senior Talmud of Rebbe, whereas Rav Yechanan was one of the junior Talmudim. So Rav Yechanan looked up to Rav and called him our Rebbe in Babel. Later on, Rav passed away. Have a kosev l'Shmuel l'kadim chavereinu shebabavel. And now, when Rabbi Yochanan wrote letters to Shmuel, because he was asking when he had questions to ask him in Torah, he would address them to our colleague in Babel. So Omar, but he said still a colleague as opposed to Rebbe. Omar, so Shmuel says to himself, lo yodoli midi de Rabbi. I don't know. Isn't there anything that I can find? Isn't there anything I can think of in which I am his Rebbe? That there's something that I'm bucky in that he's not. To be a Rebbe of somebody like Rabbi Yochanan is a big thing. So Shmuel wanted to be able to have that distinction. So Kosav Shadulei Ibura de Shittin Shni. So Shmuel sat down and wrote out an Ibur, meaning a calendar for the next 60 years. And it means that Ben Yoyada says, we're not just talking about like nowadays where the calendar is fixed and it's very easy to calculate. No. We're talking about the kind they had in those days that involved you have to figure out when the moon is visible and when it's not, and when there are eclipses, when one or another star is visible, etc. What? Yeah. We'll check it out. So Shmuel wrote that out for the next 60 years and sent it to Rabbi Yochanan, like, you know, look, here is something in which I know more than you. I know the cheshbonus of the calendar. But Rabbi Yochanan was not so impressed. Omar, so Rabbi Yochanan gets that. He says, okay, hash the cheshbon of Alma Yada. Okay, so he knows math. Very nice. That doesn't make him my Rebbe. Cheshbon of Alma? It's just calculation. It's just cheshbon of Alma. It's just calculation. So then instead, Shmuel wrote out and sent to Rabbi Yochanan 13 gamli of tzfekis on tzfekis. Now, gamli on the face of it means camels, and therefore it actually says lav dafka, doesn't literally mean 13. Sometimes the Gemara uses 13 as a guzma, but in other words, he wrote out a vast number of questions and answers in Hilchos Tzfekis. Rashi says two explanations. One is it's Hilchos Tzfekis of Tzfekis. The other possibility, Rashi says, is he heard from his Rebbeim. It means we learned back towards the end of Perek Eilu Tzfekis. We had a number of types of birds. That was a suffix whether they're kosher species or not. So Shmuel wrote out many, many camel loads worth of discussions in Halacha about why they should be osur or why they should be mutter.
It's a guzma,
but still. Well, actually, with that said, Ben Yehoyada says, you find a Gemara elsewhere, that gamli can also mean writing tablets, so maybe it literally does mean 13. He wrote out 13 writing tablets full of such questions and answers. Yeah. Omar, so now Rabbi Yochanan was impressed by that. Omar, Isli Rabba Bubba, look at that. I have a Rebbe in Bubba that he knows so much in Hilchos Tzfekis. Which, by the way, we've had a couple of times in our Masechta, Rabbi Yochanan himself was an expert in Tzfekis. We had a couple of times in our Masechta where Rava says about a son of his who gives a son of Rava's own son who gives a very good question or a very good answer in Hilchos Tzfekis, that Rava is very impressed and says, look, my son is as expert in Tzfekis as Rabbi Yochanan, and now Rabbi Yochanan is impressed by how much Shmuel knows more than that on him. Ezel Efziye, so Rabbi Yochanan says to himself, I should go see him. Well, that means he was going to travel to Babel. But, as we said before, Rabbi Yochanan would check first by asking a kid, Amalei li nuka psoik li psukah. So he says to a cheder kid, tell me what pasuk you've learned, and I'll know to go about based on that. Amalei u Shmuel meis. And the kid quotes a pasuk from Sefer Shmuel that says that Shmuel died. Now there, in context, of course, it's talking about Shmuel the Navi, but here, Omar, so Rabbi Yochanan says, Shmamina noch nafshe de Shmuel. That means Shmuel has passed away. In that case, there's no sense in going, because I won't be able to meet him anyway. However, the Gemara says, Veloihi, actually that wasn't the case. Loi shokhed Shmuel. Shmuel had actually not passed away. Rav Shuda Goin tells us that Shmuel outlived Rav by 7 years. So all of this didn't take 7 years. So therefore, Shmuel is actually still alive. Ella, so why did Hashem cause that this kid would tell him this pasuk to Shmuel Meis? The reason is because Hashem didn't want the Rabbi Yochanan to go to all the tircha of traveling from Eretz Yisrael to Babel.
It could have been because it also nichush.
No, but that's the point. It's not nichush. No, to ask the kid in and of itself is not nichush for any of these various reasons. because it has a logical connection with what he's doing, or because he didn't actually say that I'm not going to go if I get a politic that goes against it, or because or any of these various other reasons that we've been mentioning. Okay.
So it didn't happen.
Tanya, we learn in a bright, a little more on this topic. Rav Shimon ben Elazar, bias tinaik v'isha, when a person has built a new house, or tinaik, Rashi says, where he had a new baby was born. Bias means a house. Tinaik means, bias means he built a new house. Tinaik means he had a new baby, a new baby was born to him. Or the Rambam says it means the same kind of thing of asking a kid a pasuk. The isha, or when a person got married. Now, you're not allowed to do nichush with these things. You're not allowed to say that it's nichush, you know, because this kid was born, you know, if this kid is born today, let's say, then I'm going to do such and such business. That you're not allowed to do. But yesh simen, but there can be a simen in it. For example, if you say, if a person is in business, let's say, and he built a new house, built or bought or whatever, a new house, and then he sees that his next time he does business is successful, then he can use that as a simen that he's going to be more successful.
What kind of sin? No,
that's exactly it. In other words, that he can say that if he said in the first business deal that he did, let's say, after the house was built or after the kid was born or after he got married, and then if the next one is successful, then it'll be a sin. He can use that as a sin, and he's allowed to say that that's a sin and that I will be successful from now on.
And
that's not considered nichush. That's not considered nichush for one reason, for many reasons, including because he's not making his actions depend on that thing. He's going to do the actions anyway. He's going to engage in business regardless.
On the future, it was on a farm.
That's part of it. And actually, the Rambam phrases it that way, basically, that he's allowed to, that also, for that matter, the Rambam phrases it a little differently. A person is allowed to say, ever since I bought this house, I've been having good mazel. That's not nichush, because he's not saying I'm going to do such and such, or I'm not going to do such and such based on that. So therefore, so that's just such a thing as allowed. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, and we'll finish up the matter of Bafish and its Alam and Ayin, and then we'll talk about what the actual practical halachas are that come out from that whole discussion.
And what's the practical halachas in Greek?
Tomorrow. Thanks for sharing.